Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Marvin Weinbaum, who's a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Illinois and a scholar in residence at the Middle East Institute. He served as an analyst on Pakistan and Afghanistan for the United States Department of State's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, and he's the author of The Future of Afghanistan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Marvin Weinbaum.
Hello, everyone.
So, Marvin, what do you make of the remarks by General John Nicholson, the general in charge of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan? He was meeting at a press conference with General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, who's on a tour, and he was responding to earlier anonymously well, it wasn't as much leaked, but it came from anonymous sources in the military saying that the Russians were sending weapons to the Taliban. And the General Nicholson said, we continue to get reports of this assistance. We support anyone who wants to help us advance the reconciliation process, but anyone who arms belligerents who perpetuate attacks like the one we saw 2 days ago in Mazar-e Sharif is not the best way forward to a peaceful reconciliation. So it doesn't sound like anybody's really sort of making concrete charges, but they're letting these charges sort of stay out there. So what do you make of this?
Yes, well, we're pushing back against the Russians, who clearly have, after more than 25 years of really staying out of Afghanistan, after all, they left under circumstances which were not the best for the Soviet Union and certainly contributed to its downfall. But what we are seeing, Ian, is Russia's efforts here to become a player in the region, particularly as they sense American vulnerabilities. Given the state of relations with the Russians, it's not surprising that they would try to take advantage of us. And right now, we do have our backs against the wall in Afghanistan, in that we've got no clear way forward here. And the Russians, well, I have a high regard for General Nicholson. I think everybody who's known him feels that way. But as you suggest, it's the statements that they're making are certainly not concrete ones. I think I would put it this way, Ian, that what they want here is they certainly want to see the Islamic State and not emerge as a powerful force in Afghanistan. And the Taliban and the ISIS or Islamic State are not friends, and in fact sometimes even fight. So they want that. But more than that, my sense is that the way things are going there, they want to have a hand there in trying to create what that future is going to be like in Afghanistan if things go bad, and to keep lines open to the Taliban. It's a hedging strategy that if the Taliban play a much larger role in the future there, they want to be able to deal with them, if only to say to the Taliban, now look, we won't bother you in Afghanistan if you don't try to export your radical Islamic behavior across the borders. And I think Iran feels exactly the same way, and in a sense, so does Pakistan. All hedging strategies.
Well, specifically, an anonymous U.S. senior military official in Kabul earlier the day they had the press conference with the Secretary of Defense and General Nicholson said that Russia stepped up its assistance to insurgents over the last 18 months, providing machine guns and other medium weaponry to fighters in Helmand, Kandahar, and Uruzgan, but essentially to supply them with arms to fight the Islamic State in these areas. So that's as far as the charges go. So,
they're not fighting. Occasionally, they do have skirmishes with Islamic State, but right, as we've just seen there in Balkh province, where they killed the military, they overran the military installation. They're using these arms, obviously, wherever they've gotten them for. They're using them against the Kabul government and its forces. I think they are using that as an excuse here. Now, as to whether they actually are providing, there's no question that Russian arms are getting in there. But hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there are multiple sources for getting Russian arms. So that's not a conclusive case because they have discovered that these have an origin in Russia. So I would be very cautious, but it doesn't really matter here. The fact is Russia wants to, after more than 25 years, as I say, wants to be part of the equation. And recently they held a conference in Moscow, this number of countries were invited where Russia was looking to orchestrate here what a peace agreement would look like with the Taliban. Of course, there really is out there very little likelihood that the Taliban are interested in any kind of political settlement at this point when they think they're winning.
And again, I'm speaking with Marvin Weinbaum. He's a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Illinois and a scholar in residence at the Middle East Institute. He served as an analyst on Pakistan and Afghanistan for the United States Department of State's Bureau of Intelligence and Research and is the author of The Future of Afghanistan. So, but in a way, though, this is a bit strange where you kind of pump up or at least float this idea of the perfidious Putin selling arms or giving arms to the Taliban to stitch up America. At the same time, so many analysts that I've talked to have told me that, almost every American that's died in that war, the blood is on the hands of the Pakistanis. So,
well, that's an overstatement. Look, there's no question that Pakistan has given safe haven to certainly the Taliban leadership. But right now, what has happened over the last few years is the Taliban have succeeded in establishing a infrastructure within Afghanistan where they're less dependent upon Pakistan. And the idea, which is generally accepted in many places, that Pakistan could, if it wanted, turn off the insurgency, I think that is unfounded. Pakistan has negative influence. It can be a spoiler if it looks like, for example, a peace agreement were in the cards, they could very well prevent it from happening. But that's not the same as being able to dictate to the Taliban. The Taliban have demonstrated for a long period that they don't really take orders from anyone.
So what do you think is going to happen in the short term here? Because the Taliban spring offensive, I mean, that's normally what happens in Afghanistan because of the winter and the mountains, etc. The fighting begins in the spring. The U.S. is about 8,400 troops in Afghanistan, and there's another 5,000 NATO troops and U.S. Central Command. I think they've asked for another 300, have they? 3,000 troops. But the general impression I get, and of course this was certainly highlighted by the Taliban attack on the young cadets who were military cadets who were unarmed coming back from the mosque when they were slaughtered, about 150 were killed and 100 wounded by the Taliban. You get the impression. It's not just the Taliban are going away. They're on a roll, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And again, it's the Taliban that are the threat to the government, to the future of Afghanistan. Not Islamic State, but we have built that up because that Islamic State for us is the poster boy of the bad guys. But I wish we were spending more time focusing on the Taliban and stunting their coming offensive. And in fact, there really is no fighting season anymore in a way, as we have seen throughout the last few months. The Taliban, because they have established such strong roots within the country, are able to mount attacks through the year now, Having said that, there's no question that what is pending now is a major offensive on the part of the Taliban, where they are, they won't necessarily try to hold on to territory, but they will try to demonstrate at every opportunity that they can penetrate, whether it's in Kabul or anywhere else, they can penetrate wherever they choose. And in that sense, it's more like a Tet offensive, where they don't have to win. They have to merely create the psychological sense here that the government cannot protect people, and therefore get, of course, within the army and within the public to a sense here that time is not on the government side.
So what kind of honest metrics are there in terms of a lot of the U.S. troops there and the additional 3,000 they're asking for are meant to help train the Afghan security forces? Well, we've been hearing that for almost a decade. And this is, by the way, the longest war in U.S. history. So my sense is that the Trump administration basically is a government of and by stunts. They just have a stunt. They threw a few cruise missiles and they dropped this at Syria, and then they dropped the mother of all bombs. And from what I can understand, it wasn't particularly effective. There's no real concrete evidence of killing a bunch of Islamic State fighters that they've claimed to have done. And there's no clarity coming.
To the extent that there's anyone who's orchestrating our policy there, it's the generals on the ground there, mm-hmm. and they have asked for additional forces. The strategy going forward now, because the military really basically, there's continuity there in their thinking. The strategy is one of buying time for Afghanistan. There's little likelihood here that they can defeat the Taliban militarily, but the hope here is that if they can keep this government going for another 3-5 years, if this government can demonstrate that it can put its act together, and that means the military, that means the economic side of it, it means, very importantly, that they can reconcile the leadership among themselves. If they were able to do that because we bought them time with them, what is relatively a minimal investment compared to a few years ago when we had almost 100,000 troops there. Well, if we can do that, the thinking here is that no, we probably will still not be able to have a grand bargain with the Taliban, but that we can begin to erode support for the Taliban as the Taliban fighters themselves say, you know, we're better off striking a deal with the government than we are in continuing what looks like an endless war. That's really all we have, Ethan. Ian, we really don't have anything more than that. And I wouldn't put any money on that strategy, but it's what we have. And yes, it's still everywhere you see, well, let's strike a bargain with the Taliban, as I said before. There's no indication the Taliban have any interest in it. And we also have to keep in mind, they don't want to strike a bargain because they don't want to join a democratic constitutional government. They have the image of a Sharia state, which is radically different than what we would accept in terms of human rights, but in terms of really just generally governance. So that their vision of an Afghanistan is very different than our own, and we'll never be able, I think, to change the leadership on that. But we can begin with a government which has resilience here to, as I suggest, to begin to wean away elements from it, commanders who will go over to the government. It's a long shot, but again, it's the only, I think, option that we have.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes then, do you think there's anything we could do, for example, not that we have good relations with Iran, but I've always wondered why it is. I mean, we know, for example, that the Indians helped build a road from the Indian Ocean all the way up to through the Iranian border into into Herat, was it not? They have a dog in this fight. They have a border, yes. And there's a Shia minority there that they want to protect. I mean, will we end up with a kind of Northern Alliance situation where there's a sort of rump left of Afghanistan, and that the Taliban will control most of the east and the south?
Well, there are people out there who think that the way it will end up is that the country will be divided with an Iranian sphere of influence, a Pakistani sphere of influence, one from those who are closer to Russia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, that somehow this is the way it ends up. But that very honestly is a civil war. It's a civil war which I think is going to be disastrous for everybody. One thing that all of the neighboring countries have in common is that if they could see a prosperous, stable Afghanistan, and this includes Pakistan, this would be in their best interest. The trouble is that they have trouble believing it won't end up with a fractured state in which every one of them is going to be looking out for its own interests.
Well, Marvin Weinberg, we've run out of time, and I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
And again, I'll be speaking with Marvin Weinberg, Mr. Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Illinois and a scholar in residence at the Middle East Institute. He served as an analyst on Pakistan and Afghanistan at the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, and is the author of The Future of Afghanistan.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.